Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me, as always, there is Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hello.
And Danny King, a writer for The Film Stage.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's good to have you back again, Danny. Today, for our primary review, we will be talking about The Wolverine, newest Marvel film in the X-Men universe, directed by James Mangold, screenplay by Mark Bomback and Scott Frank, who is a fantastic screenwriter. Stars Hugh Jackman. Could have really, really looked at some of these names before trying to do this. Tao Okamoto and Rila Fukushima. Before we get into that, we're going to have our discussion topic. Today we'll be talking about the recently announced TIFF lineup, the Toronto International Film Festival. And then afterwards, we'll be giving you our selections for things coming out on Blu-ray and DVD and to theaters in the coming week, so you can make a better informed decision on how to spend your money with regards to cinema. Before we get into that, I'd like to thank everyone who goes to iTunes to give us a rating and a comment, and everyone else should do that as well. And if you'd ever like to get in touch with us, you can at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So, let's get into it, guys. The Toronto International Film Festival lineup was announced this week. We have a number of premieres, large movies, small movies. So, what were our thoughts when we first started seeing these things come out? Were we excited? Because there's a pretty good mix every year. I'm wondering how we feel like this year stacks up to all those. So, Nick Newman, what about yourself? What are your broad thoughts on the Toronto International Film Festival lineup this year?
I thought it was impressive, albeit a little underwhelming. My thoughts basically would dictate that while this has a number of good films, movies I'm looking forward to, unfortunately, there's very little here that I won't be seeing within the next 6 months or so. Right. And that kind of tempers my expectations a bit, whereas at a festival like Cannes or even Venice, you'll have these movies which may not hit for another year or another year and a half, which kind of creates some more anticipation. And you don't really know as much about those movies, whereas these have been kind of more in the open. Sort of have a better idea of what they're going to go for. And not only that, but I mean, a lot of them will be starting the award season too, which is sort of its own thing to dread, but that's more a personal thing, I guess. But it is a good lineup overall. Don't get me wrong. I think one of the premieres, which I'm actually looking forward to the most is, The Double, directed by Richard Ayoade. Who's following up the film Submarine, which was one of my favorite movies of that year. The thing is, I want to see, Gravity and 12 Years a Slave and et cetera, but these are movies which will not exactly be difficult to get a hold of. I'd be more excited if I was actually going, but as I'm not, I am a little more reserved on it overall, because I'm not going, but I'll be seeing them soon enough.
Well, I'm very excited because I am going.
Oh, really? I didn't
know. Oh, right. Yeah, I saw that.
Going to Toronto, guys.
Oh,
A friend of mine from the movie blogging days who lives there has spent the last 2 years browbeating me, politely, into finally going. It's something that I've wanted to do, and I just kind of needed this guy to continuously push me. So it's a good combination of really wanting to go and see these movies early and, get in touch with a little bit of the film festival circuit, and also just wanting to make this guy shut up. So thank you, Ryan, if you're listening, for making me go to Toronto. So I'm pretty... It's a mix of what you were saying, Nick, because on the one hand, I love the fact that I'm finally going to be one of those people who gets to see 12 Years a Slave early or gets to see Gravity early. But at the same time, oh, Rush, I'm kind of looking forward to.
At the same time, you know that it doesn't improve your life.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm gonna get to see those anyway. It's just like what happened with Looper last year. Like, I was really pissed off that everyone got to see Looper before me, but in the end, I got to see Looper.
That's the sound I imagine you made when people saw Looper before you.
That's pretty close. Just try to be a little drunker. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, you know. And then you kind of this is the problem that I'm sure everyone has when they go to a film festival. You have to try to kind of balance it out because you're like, I really want to see this movie, and I've been waiting so long, I don't want to wait anymore. But also, there are some films there that I may never get to see outside of the festival, so it becomes a toss-up. So my thoughts were, really excited, because I actually bought my tickets the morning that they announced the movies. So it was literally like, I got my confirmation email, and then Twitter started erupting. And I was like, alright, I made a damn good choice.
Was that like your festival tickets?
Yeah.
Or so do you get like a pass or something? Or
There's ways to do it. I got the, I'm only going to be able to be there for 4 days. So I got the 10-ticket package. I guess this is a little inside baseball. You buy the ticket package of your choice. It goes in multiples of 10. All the way up to like 180 or something, which just seems impossible to me. But I got 10, and at some point I'll be given a randomly assigned date where I will be able to go in and then select what movies I would like to go see.
Wow.
Yeah. So as soon as they announce like the schedule and then I get my date, I go in and I can start doing this. From everything I've heard, it is not difficult to get into films even like 12 Years a Slave or Gravity. So I'm looking forward to that. And time will tell. I guess this is as good a time as any to say that I'm going to try to do some kind of running dispatch from up there using my extensive multimedia journalism skills. I'm not sure how it's going to work out. It may be a tremendous failure, but anyone who's interested, keep an eye on this space. I will have more information for you as time goes on. But back to what we were actually talking about. Danny, what were your thoughts on the lineup this year?
Well, the lineup now is even more anticipated by me for your participation there.
Oh, well, thank you, Danny.
yeah, that's my most anticipated film right there.
The Brian Rowan Experience.
Yeah.
The movie.
Takes a very, very dark turn in the third act.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie, guys. Whenever I go to another city, shit tends to get real.
Wow.
Yeah. I believe it.
I have a way of finding the seediest places and people. So
I mean, look at where you are right now.
I know, D.C. Prince
no, I'm talking about
County.
On this podcast.
Oh. I mean, yeah, Danny, I constantly assume that you're just a murderer, and that's why you're so selective with your words.
Yes.
Because you think that any slip-up could possibly tip your hand.
Absolutely.
So anyway, what are you looking forward to at the festival, Danny?
Yeah, I kind of jotted down a couple titles here. One of them is called Under the Skin, which is the first film Jonathan Glazer's made in like 9 years. He made Birth, and then before that he directed Sexy Beast, and he's a really talented director, and I think some people were wondering if this movie would show up in Cannes earlier in the year, and I don't know if it wasn't finished or if it got turned down, but it's finally here in Toronto. And I actually read the novel that the film's based on by Michelle Faber. And it's pretty dark and interesting. It's kind of one of those novels that has a really fascinating central concept. It's about this woman who is an alien, and she's like kind of living with humans, and they don't really know she's an alien. Hard to explain. But the point is that it's kind of the thing where you think a director or a screenwriter adapting it could kind of stay true to the central concept, but also maybe take some adventurous turns in the story if he feels so inclined. So I'm interested to see how closely it hews to the novel. And that's also one, you know, Nick was talking about movies that kind of already have release dates. This is one that it's probably a bit uncertain when we'll be able to see it. So that might be another reason to look forward to it. In terms of some other titles, there is an animated film called Attila Marcel, which is made by Sylvain Comey, who directed The Illusionist. And another reason to look forward to that is I think it has a voice performance from Bernadette Lafont, who just passed away. So more reason to be interested there. And, you know, there are certainly other titles as well. You know, you don't need to tell, you don't need me to tell you that.
No, because I have to pick.
I suspected there were other movies playing.
I wasn't sure, though. I mean,
is there more to the lineup that they still have to announce?
Yes.
Because there's, usually, 300 movies or something.
I was about to say, they announced most of the big ones, like the gala premieres and everything.
There are a couple of movies which actually weren't announced, which I imagine will show up.
Why don't you throw that speculation at us?
I thought Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers movie, would be there. Since I think they've been at Toronto with all four of their past movies except for True Grit, which simply wasn't finished at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think a few foreign titles from Cannes will probably show up in a sidebar selection. So I imagine stuff like A Touch of Sin or Shield of Straw or Blind Detective.
Which are all things that I really wanted to see, so I would be excited if that happened. Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm hoping to see there because the speculation was that it was so long and so sexual that to get released here it would have to get cut down a little bit.
From what I understand, it's going to be uncut. It comes out October 25th from IFC.
Nice.
So I think, Alan, maybe you'll want to watch it in the comfort of your own home.
Okay. That's a little disturbing. Were there any, you talked about the Double Nick. Were there any other, films that aren't releasing large, massive trailers that you think that you'd like to see there?
Sure. I would say that, there's August Osage. No, I'm kidding. I don't want to see that.
Do you really not want to see August?
No, it looks terrible.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at the lineup here and I'm kind of scrolling through. I mean, there are some that I'm more curious about. For instance, there's a movie called All Is By My Side, which is a Jimi Hendrix movie starring Andre 3000. So who knows how that'll go. You know what I really want to see?
It's going to be fantastic, Nick. What are you talking about?
You know what I really want to see is The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby.
Yes.
Starring Jessica Chastain and James McAvoy. It has crazy supporting cast. Like, there's Viola Davis, Kieran Hines, Isabel Huppert, William Hurt, and Bill Hader. I'm so curious about that because I really have no idea what's going to happen with that. But it sounds fascinating. It's a two-part film about a married couple. And, you know, two actors I really like in the middle of it all. So bring that on.
I was upset that it was not based off the Beatles song, though.
I imagine it'll...
It's got to play into it somehow, right?
I was going to say, maybe it won't be in the film because it's probably really expensive to get. But there's also Joe from David Gordon Green, which I'm kind of curious about. I'm not a huge fan of his, but he's kind of been doing, with Prince Avalanche, he's kind of been shaking things up a bit.
I was about to say, I feel like it's weird that Sundance had Prince Avalanche and then this one's got a completely different one.
Yeah.
It looks a little bit like Mud, too.
It has Nicolas Cage playing a hard-living, hot-tempered ex-con. That sounds like something I'd really want to see. Also, one of the title is just kind of one I'll throw out is Night Moves from Kelly Reichardt, following up one of my favorite movies of its respective year, Meek's Cut Off. Starring Jesse Eisenberg and who is that? Peter Sarsgaard.
Now, is that based off the Bob Seger song?
No.
Why are all these songs in the titles of movies and they're not even based off them?
Mm-hmm.
These are songs that are important to me.
So, it is a good lineup. I didn't mean to sound down on it. I just, I'll be seeing a lot of these soon.
Yeah, and it's things like that. Here's some that I'm excited for that I'm not even sure I'm going to see because I know they're coming out. Obviously, I'm going to see 12 Years a Slave and Gravity because, come on. The Devil's Knot by, no definite article. Devil's Knot by Adam McGuire. Don John by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I know there were a bunch more. Only Lovers Left Alive. Things like that. I feel like if I'm going there, I really gotta try to trend more towards the independent and the ones that I'm not gonna see. But at the same time, things like The Devil, I really want to get in on before. Get on the ground floor, you know?
That's sort of independent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I loved Submarine.
Mm-hmm.
So I am so excited for that film.
You should see Visitors by Godfrey Reggio. I'm kind of curious about that. Do you know, he's the guy who made Koyaanisqatsi. This is like his new Mind Trip or something.
Oh, okay.
It has a new score by Philip Glass, so can't go wrong there.
I was about to say, it can't be bad.
It'll at least be nice to listen to.
Huh. Yes. Well, as time goes on, I'm sure I'm going to have to need everyone's help to figure out what 10 of all these myriad films I'm going to see. Oh God, guys, what am I gonna do? It's such a first world problem, and such a privilege problem. But yeah, I'm really I'm worried about going to see one of these movies and then it not being good, and then another movie that I didn't see coming out, and just hearing everyone go, "That was the most incredible thing ever."
I think you should change your plans and go to the Locarno Film Festival so you can see the premiere of Two Guns.
Why is that premiering there?
Because it's a great work.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a funny premiere.
I like how in the Locarno guide, it says, the newest film from Eastern European auteur Baltazar Konlicher. It's like, okay, stop.
Well, I mean, does he have auteurist touches?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe they're stretching.
This film, The Deep, that he did in 2012, around the same time that Contraband was coming out, sounds really good.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe he's just one of those guys. You know, he gets to America and it's just he's not being tapped to his fullest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That'll do it for today, though, for our discussion on the Toronto International Film Festival lineup. again, as I go there and as I figure out all the technical details, hopefully I'll be able to do quick dispatches or possibly a podcast with other critics up there. Time will tell. And yeah, I know we have two other writers going up there too, so you can expect a lot of reviews just as soon as we can type them out. So keep your eyes on thefilmstage.com for all of that. In the meantime, though, gentlemen, let's get into our review of James Mangold's The Wolverine, starring Hugh Jackman, Tao Okamoto, and Rila Fukushima, as well as, it's not a spoiler to say, Famke Jensen.
I've been trying to find you for over a year. It's an honor to meet the Wolverine.
That's not who I am anymore. Many years, I have wanted to thank you for saving my life. But I didn't send for you only to thank you, Logan. I wanted to repay you. A gift to equal the life you gave me. You have struggled long enough. I can end your eternity. Make you mortal.
So The Wolverine is the spin-off sequel side jaunt of the X-Men universe following X3 X-Men United. Wait, that was X2 is X-Men United, X3 was The Last Stand. So following X3, we find Wolverine literally lost in the wilderness. trying to find himself after having to murder Jean Grey, the woman that he loved, because she'd become the evil mutant phoenix capable of destroying the world. And, yeah. a messenger from his past comes. A dying old man wants to meet him and thank him for saving his life. And this plunges him into the Shakespearean world of Japanese high society and criminal underworld, where he takes it upon himself to act as the guardian for the old man's granddaughter, who has been targeted by the Yakuza and possibly other people. This is a smaller superhero film than we're used to, and it'll be interesting to see if that helps or hurts the genre. So, Danny King, why don't you start us off? What were your thoughts on The Wolverine?
Yeah, I liked The Wolverine. Definitely think that the smaller thing is a benefit to the movie. I think we should make a decision here if we want to pretend if the last half hour of the movie doesn't exist, or if we should if we should talk about it, because it definitely goes off the rails there. But for the first 80 or 90 minutes, I thought it was very good. I think James Mangold just kind of does a very efficient job directing it. You kind of get the feeling that not a single shot in the film is wasted. It's just telling this story quickly and efficiently. I think Hugh Jackman is really good in the role. One thing that's funny about the beginning of this movie is seeing him with long hair, because I saw another movie recently called Redemption, where Jason Statham at the start of the movie is like a homeless drunk. And he has long hair.
Whoa, wait. You saw a movie where Jason Statham has hair?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, he, you know, after about 15 minutes, he cuts it off. But at the beginning,
thank God,
because he's homeless and a drunk, you got to give him that long hair.
It's true. Just everyone looks, knows that drinking makes your hair grow long.
Yeah. It's like, so, yeah, that just kind of looks funny. But I think my favorite parts of the movie were kind of like, this is going to sound weird, is like the romance. I thought the movie like did a good job as like just focusing on the characters and telling a nice little love story there in the middle. And yeah, I don't really have that much to say about it at the moment. Gonna hand it off here because it's not a very complicated film. It just sort of does what it sets out to do, and it's satisfying.
All right, and Nick, what about yourself?
Does anyone else think the X-Men series has missed a huge opportunity by not setting any of their trailers to DMX's X Gonna Give It To You?
I mean, maybe the first one.
Right.
After that, maybe not. But, I mean, that would have been fantastic. In fact, mm-hmm. I'm sure that if we go to YouTube, we could find something like that.
All right.
X-Men, this is, X Gonna Give It To You.
This is not a fucking game. Fuck what you heard. I feel like that sentiment, fuck what you heard, kind of applies to this movie, because I was expecting it to be bad. Coming off of X-Men Origins Wolverine, which, lest we forget, is probably one of the worst summer movies of all time.
I never saw it, but I heard such things.
Whoa, you're reviewing this and you never... Whoa. You never saw...
X-Men Origins?
Wow.
I know. I mean, how do I keep up with the story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that is a film which is terrible in ways that are kind of difficult to quantify. So coming into this, I was not even remotely looking forward to it. And I avoided pretty much everything about it because I just thought, why would I even care? You know, why even? And then, surprise, surprise, the movie's good, which I was not at all expecting. I do agree with Danny that the last 30 minutes or so were quite poor. But even with that, my estimation of the film has been holding up since I saw it. And again, Danny mentioned James Mangold, who he is right that very little of this film is kind of wasted, visually speaking. And I think it helps that he's probably the most skilled filmmaker who's ever made an X-Men film. Which I don't think is saying much when you look at the crowd. It's Bryan Singer, Brett Ratner, Gavin Hood, and Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
And I think, you can rise above that.
Let's be careful. And I like Matthew Vaughn.
I mean,
he's not fantastic, and I do think James Mangold is better than him. But
yes, okay.
So yeah, I guess that would be my rank: right. James Mangold, Matthew Vaughn, Singer, and Ratner.
Okay. Yes, Ratner is definitely at the bottom. But anyway,
if I could take him off the list altogether, I'd do it.
Oh, okay. But yeah, no, I think that the movie is surprisingly calm. It's surprisingly patient. It really isn't rushing to get anywhere, which was quite nice. Because yeah. A lot of times you'll see these superhero films which kind of need to... I mean, speaking of the last Wolverine film, which needed to accumulate as many characters as it could in only about, 110 minutes or so. This is a movie that kind of just goes slowly. It just plays itself gently. And it actually lets the character breathe a bit. And I think it actually understands the Wolverine bits more than any other X-Men movie. And it sort of gets what makes this character tick. And then on top of that, you add Hugh Jackman, who doesn't... It's weird how he never really seems tired of playing the character.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting. This is 13 years after X-Men, and he's still kind of bringing things to it, which I really appreciate.
I was going to say, he is the reason this character really works still, is just because of his, commitment to it. I get the feeling that he must have really been a fan of Wolverine before becoming him in the theaters, because, that's the kind of energy that it seems like only a fan could really bring.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I mean, it's funny, I didn't expect James Mangold to really handle the action scenes so well, just because I don't know, it's not really something I would think of coming from him. But the action scenes in here are quite good, and they're, there's a lot of wide shots, there isn't a lot of cutting, it's kind of following a consistent pattern.
Yeah.
So that was all very much a relief, and I guess maybe I shouldn't be that surprised, because he made 3:10 to Yuma, which is a movie I really like.
I really like that as well.
So, he does bring some very good things here.
Yeah, I was, I guess this is going to be our most amiable podcast ever, because I, too, really liked The Wolverine. I had heard disparate things on Twitter, but I've learned to kind of block those people out. But yeah, I liked this movie a whole lot. It's kind of weird. It has a lot of influences, and one of them I felt a little bit was The Gray, which...
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that it pulls from The Gray a bit. But also, I think a lot of it has to do with the writing and the direction. And also, I mean, maybe we were talking about how bad X-Men Origins Wolverine was. I mean, maybe that was a good thing, because I feel like after that, when they made this film, they said, all right, we're not giving you as much money, and that made them rein it in a bit, because I really liked this kind of personal story, and this kind of almost, it takes the tone and the pacing almost of a noir film at times, because you've just got the loner who gets pulled into a situation that he can't control, and he's going against the system and playing by his own rules and trying to make things right, and he also drinks a lot. So I mean, you have all the setup you need for a really good film, and I think that focusing it in on the Wolverine and how he views his life and the supposed curse that immortality can give someone, I don't know, it was just really, really good. I think this might be the favorite movie that I've seen this summer in terms of large action films.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be my favorite summer movie of the summer, which is weird because it wasn't really on my radar screen.
It's not your favorite summer movie of the spring?
No, because some of those spring summer movies were not that great.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the direction. I loved the clarity and the calmness of the camera. There wasn't a lot of camera zooming along with things. Everything was framed well. It's really simple, clear, concise movie making. But I've gotten so used to the Star Treks Into Darkness and the Man of Steels that you kind of get you think that that's the norm. And then you see a movie like this where there's naturalistic colors and very clear action scenes where you know where everyone is. And there's hand-to-hand fights where someone gets punched, but they remain in the same city block that they were when they first were punched. And it's just things like that. You know, you just lose sight of that. And it's just, it's almost novel to see people responding like real people in a movie like this. And I really liked it. I liked the intimacy of it. I think that moving it to Tokyo and other areas of Japan as well really helped to give it a visual style that was... It was an aesthetic that we're not used to, which then again makes it novel. And also, grounding it in another culture and actually kind of leaning on the differences in the culture, it's almost like the character finds himself only after he removes himself from a world that, you know, has created in him this sense of loss. And in going to this place, he's able to find a meaning to his life. It's a superhero movie that has, like, actual thought and meaning and skill behind it beyond just empty spectacle. And the importance of that cannot be overstated. Got a little bit of problems with the last act. Not even the last act, just the last 30 minutes. But, I mean, I was able to get over it. It's a superhero film. you gotta make some allowances for shit like that. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, we'll get it. I guess we can have spoilers if we want, just to, like, talk it out a little bit. But, you know, when shit like that starts going down, you're like, yeah, I know, this is a comic. And, you know, given everything that went before and the way that this still ties in thematically, I'm okay with it.
I felt like I was in different hands pretty much from the opening scene, which is trying something that most films of this stripe aren't. I feel like we haven't seen them go for. And I guess for people who haven't seen the movie, you know, it opens with this Japanese skyline sort of at this indistinct time period. And then you'd see two planes flying over, and then there's a prisoner of war camp, and you realize that this is World War II. And then soon enough, you realize that this is an atomic bombing, and you see, you know, you realize that Wolverine is the one person in this situation who can actually live. And the way it plays out from there was not only unique, but it wasn't exploitative, I thought. It didn't, you know, one of my biggest problems with movies like Star Trek Into Darkness or Man of Steel is how they, I feel they kind of exploit the 9/11 imagery for effect. This, I mean, first of all, let's be honest, anybody who's going to be, you know, truly offended by that is probably, by this, is probably dead. So,
Jesus.
You know, well, I mean, you know, it's not even just that it was a terrible bomb. It's also that it was so long ago.
Right.
But also, it doesn't play it for spectacle or thrills or anything.
No, it doesn't. Actually, I was going to say the imagery that they use is like horror. Like, it's not like, oh, a building's falling and he's got to fly out of the way. It's right. Like, all right, you're screwed. Like, here's the nihilistic inhumanity of man towards man.
And I also appreciated the sort of the humanity with which it treated its Japanese characters at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. I mean, it was a big surprise that they would actually take that step. And that was the moment where I realized that maybe the positive buzz wasn't just people being a little wacky.
Yeah, I actually loved that opening shot too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, again, you said it starts in a way that's unlike almost any other film of this stripe. Like, I think I had the same reaction. I was like, okay, I know that this is going to be different.
Yes. Does Danny have any thoughts on anything in the world?
Well, just talk about that a little bit. I think what was one of the recent PG-13 films where we were kind of complaining about the violence? It might have been like White House Down.
It was either White House Down or possibly Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We should mention that this movie should not be rated PG-13.
Yeah, it's very violent.
There's a lot of blood. I thought they couldn't show blood in a PG-13 movie.
I mean, there's a part where, you know, the claws go through a guy's neck. You see them go through a guy's neck, and then Wolverine has to pull a sword out of his chest. And even though it's more a silhouette effect, you still see the sword going from one end of his body to
you know,
the other.
Yeah.
I don't understand the MPA.
Yeah.
The MPAA. I mean, I wish I could look it up, because I think someone said that the reason that some of the violence was kind of looked over in this movie was because it was like mutant on mutant, and so that's not technically a person.
What?
Which is just hilarious, because I'm not going to say that it's true, but if that were the reason why they did do that, it would be hilarious, because that's basically the plot of the first three movies.
I was actually going to say, aren't the X-Men movies sort of about, you know,
how there are people?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
wow, fuck the MPAA. How could they propagate that kind of stuff?
I don't know. Wow. But yeah, I mean, it's a violent film. But it still somehow seems less violent or less exploitatively violent than something like The Lone Ranger, where you see a man's heart get eaten.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and a lot of the violence in this, actually, one of the things I liked most about this film is, it's not a spoiler to say because it's in the trailers, that at some point Wolverine's healing ability begins to get suppressed. And so it's this really weird mix of, like, he's getting shot and the bullets hurt him and they stagger him, but he's not going to, like, bleed to death. Like, he's still got enough of the healing that it's going to keep him alive, but he's still got gaping wounds on him. And that really adds, like, a lot of punch. It adds a lot of, like, the violence in this movie means something. Like, suddenly he's not mortal, he's not human by any stretch of the imagination in terms of his ability to heal. But, I mean, every impact has some kind of force upon him. And it might just be a personal thing, because I honestly have dreams and nightmares where I get shot, and it's basically like what's happening to him in this movie. Where, like, the bullet's inside of him and he's got an open wound, but he's still alive. Like, it was a weird, like, subliminal subconscious thing, but I was really in it in those moments. And so I think that the violence in this film has a lot more impact than it usually does in another film, where people either are miraculously missed by bullets or they skip off of them.
Certainly.
Okay. But Danny, you had just begun to say something about the...
Yeah,
violence.
Well, that was just one point. To go back to an earlier point about how this film is kind of satisfying in the sense that it has a smaller scale, I feel like there's also one of the things I like about it is how confident it is in the character and Jackman's performance to kind of lead the film. Because, you know, in a lot of films in this genre, you get the sense that, like, the filmmakers are trying to pack in as many characters as possible to try to, you know, satisfy fans or whatever, and that's somehow kind of represents some type of ambition. But there's actually something kind of more ambitious about just saying to Hugh Jackman, like, we're going to ask you to kind of carry this summer film. And he does it really well. And it gives him kind of a good showcase for his ability in that character. And I feel like that's just something you don't usually get a lot. I mean, even if you look at, like, Man of Steel, that doesn't really feel like a charismatic lead to me, even though it's called Man of Steel and it's supposed to be kind of his journey. The Wolverine really just puts Hugh Jackman front and center and says, like, this is your movie. And he really steps up to the challenge. So I kind of like that, you know, this movie went with that and did a good job with it.
Yeah, I got to agree.
What did we think of the Japanese actors? I really quite like these characters that they assembled.
I universally liked, like, everyone in this film. Like, I don't think there was really, like, a false note.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Rila Fukushima. Rila Fukushima as Yukio, who is the one who's featured in the trailer with the samurai sword. And then Tao Akimoto has the, I guess, unenviable possibly position of being the damsel in distress / love interest, but she's still capable. But she's also not so capable that you wonder why the hell, you know, Hugh Jackman feels the need to protect her. And I mean, again, it's not a spoiler to say, I guess, that, like, you know, two pretty people, sooner or later, they're going to like each other in a movie. I mean, their relationship as it grows is actually quite believable. And I think that it's well acted by both of them, and it, it provides, again, like that personal human touch that really elevates this movie above others.
Mm-hmm. This has been kind of a an unusually strong summer for Japanese women in blockbusters, because I was thinking of, there's this actress here, what's her name again, who plays...
Rinko Kikuchi in Pacific Rim.
Right, but in X-Men, the Japanese lead.
Which one would you say is the lead, Mariko?
Yeah, the love interest.
Tao
Okamoto, right. There, you know, I think, and there's also Rila Fukushima.
Yes.
As Yukio, the red-haired one, as you might more readily identify her, who bring kind of this strange believability to it. Maybe not so much the Mariko character, because she's just sort of a girl, but Yukio, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fine performance. I'm not going to undersell it, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But there's the Yukio character who's sort of this very strange being who I do think kind of suffers from a bit under explanation, actually, because it's not really clear how her powers work. It was sort of like, oh, I can see into the future, but I'm not going to use that ever useful.
She says that she can only, her power is literally, she can only see how people are going to die.
Right, I guess.
It's more of an impression than anything else.
So like, couldn't she have predicted that the older man would die when Wolverine throws him off of a cliff while he's wearing a big metal suit and he's 70 years younger?
I think it might be, you know, as life goes on. Here's a thing. Do you ever see the movie Push?
No.
Okay. It was basically an X-Men ripoff, but like there was this idea in it that the future creates fixed points up until the point that something changes and it's not anymore. So I think it's like if you're on a path, she can see how that path ends, but it's also possible that using that knowledge, you could shift what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you know, no one knew what was happening, and so, you know, that wasn't going to happen. But I think that she explains her power as well as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just, but I mean, also, she brings a lot of empathy to that character. Like, she really makes you feel for having that ability and the awful nature of it.
It's strange how this is actually the rare summer movie where the white female lead is the underserved one.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect that. But then there's Svetlana Kodchenkova.
Kodchenkova,
who you might know better as the love interest of Tom Hardy from Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. She plays a character called Viper, who kind of, I don't want to say she doesn't make sense, but again, it's sort of an underserved power that she has. It's just sort of like, does she really just kill people with poison? Or it's kind of,
she's poisonous.
Right.
I
thought the character was quite lame. This is part of the problem with the third act, is that her intentions feel kind of unclear past that of the nefarious sort. And then once you kind of introduce a second villain in those final moments, what was once underserved is now sort of undercut. And you realize that she's not quite, she's more a henchman.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish they just, I wish they just dispensed with her entirely, because there's no need for her here. You have sort of these more business dealings going on. The negative intentions of which are the catalyst for much of the plot. And I liked how that was what was setting it in motion, not another mutant who wants to do something bad. And, you know, her performance actually wasn't that crazy about either. She felt kind of lost here and a bit underserved.
I feel like her direction was, you're a hot blonde chick, every once in a while you have to spit on someone.
Yeah.
Which she did. It was fine.
Yes.
She definitely was hot and spat on people, so...
Right.
Since we're kind of dancing around the end, do we want to just give a quick spoiler alert and then just talk about it and then possibly what we thought about the stinger. Did everyone stay for the mid-credits sequence?
Oh, I got stung.
Okay. All right, so we're going to throw up a spoiler alert. We're going to give some quick thoughts on the last 30 minutes when some shit goes down. And then we're going to talk about the post-credits sequence and how we feel about the future of the X-Men films. So if you haven't seen it, get out and see it. We all liked it a lot. And yeah, so spoilers. Spoilers. So did anyone see it coming that the old man would be inside of the giant samurai suit?
I feel maybe kind of stupid because I didn't.
I didn't either. And I thought that it would be something like his consciousness was in it. Or, I don't know, I wasn't thinking there's going to be a man in that suit. But there was.
Yeah, I was thinking...
Once he shot like an arrow and it was bleeding, I saw that and I thought, oh, okay, so there's someone in there.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Danny?
Well, I was the opposite. I was thinking he might have been behind it, but that there was no way there was a person in that thing, in the robot suit. I thought it was like a robot.
Well, that was my thing. I thought that they were going to be like, you know, we downloaded his consciousness or transferred his essence or I don't know.
It also seems silly that a man that old who can barely sit up was able to, I don't know the mechanics of that thing, but it seems as if maybe.
Well, that's, I don't know, because that's kind of like saying that a man who can barely sit up can't play Tetris. Like, I don't know what the physical strain of being in a giant mechanical samurai suit is.
Okay, but it just, I don't know, I doubt that controlling this giant killer robot is equal to playing Tetris.
I mean,
but
I don't know. I'm not a robotologist.
Mm-hmm.
Roboticist? I don't know. I did like it, though. I thought it was interesting. It's one of those things, like, we forget that these movies are supposed to take place in the future. So when there are plot elements like those tiny shrimp squids that, you know, check people out from the inside and...
Which is a total ripoff of The Matrix.
Matrix, yeah. I was fine with it. Shit, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, but these take place in the future. So things like that, I kind of, you know, you go to a comic book movie, as much as we appreciate the groundedness, it's also nice just to see some weird stuff like that. I do think that, and you know, considering how much shit happens at the end of things like Star Trek or Man of Steel, this is still a pretty grounded ending. You know, it's still like a mano a mano, you know, two different sides of the, mm-hmm. you know, ethical coin going at one another.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, I was able to get over it. Also, it was really, really fucked up to watch Wolverine lose his claws. Those are kind of like the he himself and his claws in specific seem invaluable, and yet both were violated.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked this film. I liked what it did with that, and I was able to get over kind of the goofiness of an old man in a giant samurai suit. That was my thing. Like, if you're gonna have a samurai suit, why has it got to be that big? Especially if you're using adamantium, which is insanely rare. But, you know, what do I know? Yeah, so, yeah. I also kind of like that, this might just be random to me, but I like the fact that at the end, you know, he's going to go off because he realizes that he wants to do good in the world. And yet, like, his thing with Mariko, she's a character that I hope comes back. I hope that she remains a fixture for him in his life.
I worry that in the X-Men movie that comes out next year, they'll kill her off in, you know, 3 minutes to...
That's what I think. This isn't a spoiler because this is just my presumption, but I think they're going to do that in Thor, The Dark World. They're gonna kill Natalie Portman.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, so let's talk about the stinger. This was not your average stinger.
No, this was like a full scene.
Yeah, this was like, this like reminded me of like, you know, next time on blah, blah, blah. Not Mad Men, because this was way too clear to be Mad Men.
No.
This is random. Did you ever see previously on Mad Men?
It's like I can't say I have.
It's a YouTube thing where someone cuts like a previously on Mad Men in the exact same style and like level of opacity that they cut the next time on Mad Men.
It's pretty it's hilarious. Funny.
But yeah, what did we think about this? Does it make us excited? I'm not going to explain it because I assume that anyone who's still listening knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of fan service because there's the whole Trask Industries thing, which is like the robotic creatures which come to destroy the mutants or something.
Sentinels?
Yeah, that's what they are. To be honest, I'm still not 100% sure what the new one, X-Men Days of Future Past, is really about, because there's some time travel business.
Yeah, involved. I'm not entirely sure.
So, I mean, that's the thing, is that I guess kind of seeing these characters on screen again doesn't really excite me that much. I just don't really care that deeply. So,
I'm also worried because it's going to go back to the large scale. You know?
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
What we really seem to like about this was the scale and it being a personal story. And I'm concerned about having like 20 different people times two because it's their old and their younger selves. And
right.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember because I never read the comics, but I was a huge fan of the 1990s cartoon. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that they had the storyline of Days of Futures Past like in there, which
maybe
let's be honest, it sounds like a Moody Blues song.
I think it's among the very most famous X-Men stories, so that I don't know it should probably tell you how much I know about X-Men overall.
Yeah, Danny, do you know anything about X-Men? Can you shine some light?
No, I was going to try to come up with a joke, but
my only the only real question that I had following this stinger was where the hell is Yukio? Because like they fly away and she's supposed to be your sidekick. Yeah, I was like, I'm so excited for like Wolverine and Samurai Psychic, you know, having their adventures together, and then she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know maybe that two years have passed, but you know.
Does it say 2 years later?
Yeah.
Oh,
which seemed
okay.
Like really specific.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Maybe that doesn't fare well for her. Let's see. Has she been cast in the future past days? Let's look at her IMDb page. Well, she's not listed. So.
I was about to say she doesn't. No.
Might be goodbye to Yukio.
See, that's my concern, is that like we all liked this so much, but I'm wondering how much of what happens is going to stick around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, worried, because like this seems like such a
just
personal...
looking at the cast for the next film doesn't seem like a one-man kind of thing.
No, it doesn't, but that's the problem. Like, the things that I liked about this film are not going to be accentuated, they're not going to be brought up, it's just going to be more that insane bombast again, and like I'm gonna miss all of the personal things that made this movie good. So I'm still looking forward to it because I did enjoy First Class, and I think it'll be interesting to see those two worlds smash together a little bit. But I mean, I would be cool if every X-Men character got one of these one-off. I mean, how much did this movie even cost to make? I'm gonna look it up real quick.
Probably an okay amount.
$120 million.
Yeah.
Which is small for a superhero film nowadays, surprisingly. But I mean, we got so many good action scenes. Like that whole chase from the garden to the train, and then the fight on top of the train.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was awesome. Like things like that were incredible. And there was such a feeling of immediacy, and I'm just really worried. I think this is probably going to be the one that sticks up, and I'm going to be like, we should try this some more, guys. Give me my Gambit movie. Gambit. I just want to have that guy. I want to have like a mashup of like Treme and the X-Men. Just have Gambit in there.
Mm-hmm.
Someone out there can make this happen. I'm going to keep my positive feelings up.
Before we close this out, did anyone else find it? Has anyone else seen James Mangold's like list of influences for the Wolverine?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember most of them.
Right. I feel like it's probably bullshit. That list.
Like, well, the problem
based on
is,
this movie.
I mean, there's a difference between like watching a movie to get in the headspace and use it to direct you, and then actually like homaging it. You know.
Right. I mean, just because
13 Assassins is definitely in there.
Yeah, okay. But there's also Ozu's Floating Weeds, which I think he references in the corner of a shot at one point. Specifically, the screen cap that he used seems to be recreated in one moment of the movie. If you look at the screen cap that he tweeted out, you can probably figure out where it's from. But then, like, Chungking Express, I can't say I really spotted that. Maybe when the Viper's walking through the city streets.
I don't know. Maybe it's like the romance.
I don't remember
Chungking Express that well.
Okay, I was going to say, like, the movie doesn't really have... I don't think it would be the romance. I don't know. I saw that list and I kind of rolled my eyes because I was like, okay.
Did they eat peaches at any point?
What's that?
Did they eat peaches at any point?
Do you mean pineapple?
Was it pineapple? God damn it.
I
don't remember Chungking.
There's no pineapple in the movie.
Damn it.
In the journal film comment, they have a thing each issue where they ask a director like the last 10 films they watched. And I feel like that's just James Mangold's list, like the last 10 he watched.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's more like just I'm going to watch these to get in the headspace. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm listening to a certain kind of music when I'm writing something, I'm not saying that I'm writing this based on the music. It's just helping me get to the place I need to be to do it. All right. But any final thoughts before we move on? Since we said we weren't going to have a lot to talk about, we've been talking for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the power of a good movie.
I think we're
Solid. Done. I think we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. All right. So coming to DVD and Blu-ray, July 30th. A couple of things that you could check out if you felt the need to. Devil's Backbone is coming to Blu-ray Criterion as a re-release of 1980s The Fog. G.I. Joe Retaliation also coming out. Oh, God. Banshee Season 1, which is a show that I've heard about but not seen. And, yeah, it's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any thoughts?
Well, no, there's some more. There's The Devil's Backbone.
I said The Devil's Backbone.
Oh, I wasn't listening to a single word you
God
said.
God damn it.
I actually have no idea. I was reading something. Sorry.
Maybe you should not do that the next time that I'm speaking, so I don't seem like a fool.
Maybe. Who's more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him?
I forgot Assault on Wall Street, starring Dominic Purcell, directed by Uwe Boll.
I actually saw some of that.
No, you didn't.
I did. I was sent a screener of it by whoever's releasing it, and I just kind of looked at it, and it was so bad. Poor John Hurd. By the way, he's in this and Sharknado in the same year.
Yeah.
Does nobody remember Cutter's Way or Hours?
Or Home Alone.
Or even Home Alone. I mean, I don't know. For some reason, Francis Ford Coppola's Peggy Sue Got Married with Kathleen Turner and Nicolas Cage is being released on Blu-ray. I didn't know anybody was
clamoring,
asking for that.
Yeah.
But is that good? Or?
I've never seen it, actually. Yeah. It's one of the Coppolas I should maybe familiarize myself with it. Yeah, I've never seen it. I know Nicolas Cage talks in a really weird voice in it, or maybe more unusual than usual. Typical, yeah. But no, it's a bit of a light week. I've actually never seen The Devil's Backbone. Maybe I should.
Yeah, I haven't either. Oh, BlackRock is coming out.
Oh, wow, I don't care.
I'll throw up some more for BlackRock.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it on VOD when it came out. It's,
I think I remember you talking about it.
Yeah, I talked about it previously on one of the shows.
Okay.
It's pretty good. Check it out. It's 90 minutes long. It's not going to hurt you. Danny, did you want to highlight anything before we moved on?
I just think that Foolish Wives is supposed to be great. I haven't seen it, but it's a Stroheim film. Mm-hmm. I think he made it before Greed.
Okay.
He made it with his monocle?
Certainly.
All right. Coming to theaters, we have Two Guns.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
Denzel Washington, Mark Wahlberg, Paula Patton, Bill Paxton. The Smurfs 2. That's enough right there. The Spectacular Now, also in limited release. The Canyons and Europa Report, as well as Drift.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Thoughts on these?
I saw Spectacular Now with Jordan.
Was it good?
It's interesting. It's,
Ooh.
I don't know how much I should give away.
A lot of spoilers.
I kind of, when I tweeted about it, I wrote that the movie's like Whip Whitaker's senior year of high school.
it all comes back to Flight.
Yeah. So it has some interest for me. The first, kind of 20 minutes or so are kind of like a sort of off-putting-ish Sundance rom-com, but it actually gets pretty dark and interesting as it goes along.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I'm excited about Two Guns. What?
It's the funny sentence.
I'm excited about
it. I'm not going to lie. I'm excited about Two Guns.
I don't know. It's just, you know, it's,
I mean, Denzel just looks so good.
I mean, look at the cover of this thing. Yeah. It's Denzel and Wahlberg back to back, obviously shooting bitches, money flying everywhere.
Let's be clear, bitches as in disreputable
men.
People, not
just women. Right. They're not in like a Forever 21
category. Imagine if this movie was just them like shooting women for 100 minutes. That would be really upsetting.
That would be the most talked about film of the year. And then why there's just a helicopter over them? Like, why is that helicopter there? It's completely unnecessary to the
really
camera.
Trying to put all of the elements into the poster. It's really kind of a work of art, that poster.
Yeah. I'm also interested in seeing Europa Report.
Oh yeah.
That should be interesting, and that's actually opening near me, so I'm excited. I'm still morbidly curious about The Canyons.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Paul Schrader. Gus Van Sant acting in it, which is going to be weird. And then, of course, written by Brett Easton Ellis.
Yes, Brian's favorite.
I love Brett Easton
Ellis. Brian's favorite writer of all time.
That's not at all true, but okay. I'm going to let Nick make sweeping generalizations about my life. I can't see that going wrong in any way.
No.
Yeah,
he's
Nick.
My favorite filmmaker, Nick.
Terrence Malick.
All right, that'll work.
I don't even know if that's right.
I mean, it could be. I don't know why you thought Brett Easton Ellis was my favorite. I thought you were going to say, like,
I don't really think so. I just...
Thunder Levin was my favorite filmmaker.
Who's Thunder Levin?
He wrote Sharknado.
Oh, wow.
His name is actually Thunder.
I mean, I don't know.
That's his Christian name. Anyway, so that's what's happening next week. Have fun with that, guys. We're not sure what we're going to be reviewing. It's possible that we'll talk about Two Guns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we thought we wouldn't have a lot to talk about The Wolverine, but we did, so Two Guns might give us a lot, too.
I'm sure it will.
I'm absolutely positive it will. So let's talk about things that we've watched on our own. So, Danny, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, well.
If you're not ready.
No, I'm ready.
All right.
I had a pretty interesting double bill last night at the Museum of Modern Art. They're doing a sort of a weird series of like contemporary Warner Brothers films.
This is
the first day I've gone, but a lot of the ones they've showed are like the Harry Potter movies and like Dark Shadows and The Hangover, which is just kind of hilarious. But they showed two good films yesterday. One of them is called Fearless, a 1993 film by Peter Weir. And then Zack Snyder's Watchmen, which was pretty fascinating to see with like a museum audience that tends to sort of skew towards the elderly. It was, if you guys remember the opening scene of Watchmen, it kind of starts with like news program footage, and they're talking about like nuclear war and stuff, and there's a lot of kind of like exaggerated caricatures of like news personalities and whatnot, and then there's like the Nixon guy. And so a lot of people in the audience were kind of like laughing at that stuff. And then Jeffrey Dean Morgan starts to get like punched in the face and stabbed and thrown out the window. And the movie's like incredibly loud. And people started to kind of file out right there. But a surprising number of them stayed. And I sort of forgot how brutally violent that film can be.
Right.
So that was a little bit disturbing. But it held up pretty well. And then Fearless is also a really interesting film. Jeff Bridges plays a guy that kind of survives a plane crash and kind of goes through a really bizarre form of post-traumatic stress disorder. And both of these films are equally bizarre as like Warner Brothers products. I mean, even Watchmen, which was only made 4 years ago, you can't really imagine something like that being greenlit even today, just in terms of like how hard of an R rating it is.
And it's almost 3 hours long.
Yeah, and the runtime, it's just like kind of an insane movie. And Fearless is equally weird. I haven't been able to find a budget number for it, but it has, I mean, like a pretty pretty good plane crash sequence. I imagine that cost a bit of money, and it has a lot of name actors. And I don't know why they thought that would make money. It's like a really weird movie. But they're both very good. So it was a fun evening.
Woo. All right. Excellent. Nick, what about yourself?
Okay. I think I'm going to select a movie by the title of To Have and Have Not.
Okay.
Which is directed by Mr. Howard Hawks, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Do I have your attention?
Yes.
Anyway. Sorry about that. I think what maybe most people will notice first off when they watch this movie is how similar it is to Casablanca. And that's because the movie was actually sort of designed. It's based on a novel by Ernest Hemingway. And interestingly enough, the screenplay is co-written by William Faulkner. So you have one great author interpreting the work of another, which, makes it a worthy item. But the movie was actually sort of designed to be similar to Casablanca. And it has a very close plot, and it has a lot of the same character types and so on and so forth. But even with that kind of saddle to it, it's a really strong movie. I'm not necessarily, infatuated with the whole Bogart-Bacall business, as a lot of people seem to be, sort of that old Hollywood romance. But the movie makes for a really gripping, very propulsive kind of mystery adventure film with World War II elements sprinkled throughout, which I really appreciated. Actually, maybe that connects it to The Wolverine. Maybe I'm the first person to ever connect To Have and Have Not and The Wolverine. I think that this movie, if you're looking for a movie where Humphrey Bogart, decides to suck up his pride and do the right thing, this is kind of pretty much exactly what you'd expect from that, but that's not necessarily a bad thing either. Howard Hawks, I don't know how much else you really need to say about him, considering that pretty much every word that could be written about him has already been written three times over. But, it's always nice to watch one of his motion pictures. So overall, it was a very pleasurable view. Might not be the best movie I watched this week, and it might not be the, not the heaviest, not the one with the most to chew on, but this was probably the most pleasurable viewing.
All right. I've got some choices to make, I guess. First of all, I don't know if I'm not going to recommend this to anyone, but has anyone here ever heard of a movie called The Third Wheel?
No.
Okay, so here's the story. I was sitting on the couch the other day. I was working on something, and my roommate flipped to watch the end of Elizabeth the Golden Age. And then when that movie was over, no one decided to change the channel. And so we found ourselves having to, first of all, we were baffled by, and then we were kind of morbidly enthralled by, a movie called The Third Wheel. This is the plot as described by the Internet Movie Database. A man accidentally hits a homeless person with his car and then can't seem to get rid of him for the rest of his night while he's on a date with Denise Richards.
Denise Richards, the actress.
Like, so she's playing someone else. Like, she's playing Diana, but it's like this schlumpy idiot guy who can't act right around women. And he hits a homeless guy, and then the homeless guy is, like, stuck with them. Like, they just can't get rid of him. These are the actors who are involved in this movie from 2002. Luke Wilson, Denise Richards, Ben Affleck, Melissa McCarthy, and, oh, God, Matt Damon.
Wow.
Whoa.
Never even heard of this movie.
Right? What? Guys, this movie was insanity. Like, it's crazy. There's so many disparate elements and so many, like, tricks that the director uses. And, like, it's so bizarre. It's so weird. And, like, every stupid thing that you think is going to happen in it happens in it. It's nuts. And the best part is that it ends with a full cast lip sync of Bust a Move that plays throughout the entire end credits.
Yeah. Was it good? Was it, like, a really good...
No. It's, like, it's a fascinating disaster. Because it starts, and you just have no idea what's happening in this film. And, like, there's, like, okay, some of the disparate elements. Every once in a while, but not often enough that it's actually, like, a theme or, like, a thing that happens in the movie, Luke Wilson will have a fantasy, and, like, his fantasy will take the place of reality for a second. Not only that, but Ben Affleck is playing his best friend who has an entire office-wide betting pool as to, like, how far he'll get with this woman. There's a stupid plot point involving a note card that he wrote about the girl. There's the homeless guy who is not just homeless but appears to be mentally retarded. You watch it with this growing sense of uneasiness because literally anything could happen. And it's just like, it's terrifying and fascinating. And I went on Wikipedia because I needed to know how all of these people got involved in this movie. And there is nothing. I can't find a goddamn thing about this movie. I do know that the writer plays the homeless man and is second billed on the DVD cover art.
Mm. Are you going to buy the DVD?
Absolutely not. It's crazy. So that's just out there. I want people to be aware of that. Yeah.
You know, that sounds shocking.
Yeah, it's a pretty shocking film. And then I watched Ray, which is good.
No, I haven't seen that.
Though it plays at this point because, like, movie biopics have become such a staid genre and you know, they've been made fun of. It almost plays like a parody of itself. But it's still got a great performance, and, you know, the music of Ray Charles is incomparable. And then I watched Dread, the movie with Carl Urban, which is fantastic, a great action film if you're looking for one of those. But yeah, I just wasted all my energy trying to explain the bafflement that is The Third Wheel to you all. So I'm just going to let that one linger out there. If anyone wants to watch this and tell me what they thought of it, I welcome it. I fucking welcome it. Yeah, so that's what I thought. It's over, guys. We've come to the end. I want to thank everyone for hanging out with us, listen to us, send us your thoughts on The Wolverine. You can either email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com, or you can find us on Twitter, and we will now tell you where to find us on Twitter and elsewhere on the internet. So, Danny, you kick us off.
Yeah, thefilmstage.com, thekingbulletin.com, and twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And Nick?
Filmstage.com, twitter.com/Nick_.
And I can be found on thefilmstage.com, as well as my personal blog, dearfilm.net. And on Twitter at twitter.com/BrianJRowan. So join us next week. We'll be talking about a movie. We just don't know what it is yet. Radio, live transmission. I'm not even going to try to say Svetlana Kodchenkova. Oh, God damn it. I did it. Brian T.
Did you recognize her?
I did not. Hold on. Don't tell me. I want to be surprised.
You'll probably be surprised.
I'm probably going to be surprised. She was in Tinker Tailor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was the love interest of Tom Hardy.
Oh, damn. She fucking was. God. Now, maybe if someone had shot her in the head, I would have noticed.
Well, she was Viper, so...
Danny, what the hell does that have to do with anything?